All right, let me do the intro.
Okay, hit it.
Unless you want to do it.
Yeah, only 43 minutes into it. Let's start the intro. We do basically a full podcast length of...
Yeah, it was fun editing this last episode that just came out. Even in the front, it's like, we're 40 minutes in. Now let me do the intro.
You guys just keep chatting.
You're listening to And This Is Why I Love Comics.
And here, Mike. And here, Mike.
Please elaborate.
And welcome to another episode of And This Is Why I Love Comics. I'm Andy.
And I'm Mike.
And we are the podcast for old men complaining about comics and everything else that we can think of. We don't all just complain. We're also friends. And we've known each other for a long time. And we enjoy chatting away about things we love. And I'm using the word and a lot. But that's what I do. And yeah, see, I just said it. I used to use the word definitely, but I've tried to cut back on it. So I just use the word and now.
Very much a Rain Man kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Wapner.
Definitely, definitely. Or the Tick. Yeah.
Sea Urchin or whatever the character Sea Urchin,
yeah. With that wonderful intro, spring break, I mean, might actually just, this conversation might just start right now on spring break.
We have city water in the office, and somebody was kind enough to buy one of those like giant water filter things you put in the refrigerator. It's got the little spigot on the side. You have to constantly fill it up with tap water, and it filters. Fantastic thing. I've been filling that thing up and putting in the refrigerator, filling it up, putting in the refrigerator, that it just become old hat. Unfortunately, this particular time, I filled it all the way up, started putting it in the refrigerator. The thing hits the edge of the refrigerator as I'm letting go of the back of it so it can slide onto the shelf. Then proceeds to just completely drop out of my hands, fall to the ground, smash, and a gallon plus of water is now pouring all over the ground. I then proceed to go, oh crap, let's see, what do I got? Is there a mop in this break room? No. Is there absorbent towels? No. We have those stupid, like, one, you know, like 8 inches by 8 inch square, you know, wafer thin paper towel that I'm dropping down on the ground, running back over to the other side of the room, grabbing another square, dropping it down, going over. And what the paper towel does is it doesn't absorb the water. It just becomes a wet paper towel. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's just like absolutely zero functionality. Doesn't work whatsoever. I legitimately go through 50 to 60 sheets of this stuff to try to absorb a gallon of water. It's still not absorbing it. Yeah, it's just like, it's getting over. And then I have coworkers coming in. He's like, what's going on? And it's like, what is it?
You're screaming and crying. You're yelling, the madness has got to stop. Man.
So much blood. So it's everywhere. And then with everybody that's coming in, I have to give a new reason. I don't know why. It's just like, now, I don't know if you remember Mad Magazine. It was like, you know, dumb responses for stupid questions or something like that. And it was like that kind of thing where everybody comes in asking, what happened? Clearly there's water on the floor. Clearly I'm mopping it up. So like the first guy that comes in asks what's happened, you know, I'm saying like, well, when you get to our age, your bladder just doesn't hold it like it used to. And then the next person comes in and it's like, what happened? It's like, well, I was talking to this guy. He says that the best way to dance, is to get the floor nice and wet. And then you get random dance moves. You know, you're just throwing all sorts of crap out that you can, just anything, because it's like, what else do you think of this is?
Thought I'd start an aquarium.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was like that. You know, it's like I had other things about like trying to see if I could have little boat races in the break room. Oh, gosh, it was such a ridiculous.
Should have seen the fire.
Yeah, I just wanted to see if the floor was level and see if the water would drain a certain way. One after another. Now, I did have only one out of all my coworkers actually helped, and they were trying to pull the paper, handing it to me So I wasn't having to do this stupid, like, double dare, Nickelodeon's double dare, where you have to run over to one side, grab a thing, bring it over to the other side, and you got 30 seconds to accomplish all this.
You know, at that point, you just turn the lights off, go to sleep, and you hope that the next day is going to be better.
Or I can record a podcast. Yeah. Oh, and, you know, obviously with everything rolling over to AI, we went to show some friends, like, hey, there's this software that's, you know, being touted that you only have to put it in some text and it'll create a full video of a certain, you know, amount of time, but it's like, you know, 60 seconds, 30 seconds or whatever, but it's all based off of text prompts. So it's like, wow, that's brilliant. I went to show the video and I go, wait a minute, this video looks kind of funky. So the reason why I even came across this was that I came across another, it was through a YouTuber who had a sponsor, and the sponsor was this AI generated video. This YouTuber reacts to other YouTube videos. So it's kind of an inception moment of this, you know, guy watching another guy watching videos. Well, so I went to show my colleagues and they started backwards through the video, and I, you know, it was just an ad in the middle, but they scrolled back, and when they let go of their finger, it was on, there is a YouTuber out there who makes fun of women who get upset when guys stare at them at gyms for wearing inappropriate clothing. It legitimately stops at this, like, it shows up and it's just a bunch of women in gym clothing. So these guys that I'm showing this to scroll back and they see this, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Of all the moments to have, like, scrubbed back, let go, watch the video, and it's like, whoop, you went back too far, and
you had to stop there, didn't you?
That one spot, you didn't stop where they talked about, like, look at this monkey stealing food from somebody in, like, Malaysia, or look at this happening at Walmart. It's this dude making fun of these women. So, yeah, it's just one disaster after another, after another, after another. So, yeah, today's been one of those days. And then I had a coworker who, we're the only ones who use the Apple devices at work. Everybody else has bent the knee to the Microsoft Windows environment, which is fine. You know, I don't mind
no,
it.
It's not
the end of the world. And Macs are not necessarily the best thing ever either. Definitely not. They've tried to force a Windows environment onto a Mac computer, and now we're all having problems of it kicking us off the network because it doesn't recognize these devices. And because of the industry that I'm in currently is super concerned about security, this is a foreign device and locks it out. So this guy has now been locked out of the network now for 2 days. And it's like, okay, can I have you do this while you're locked out? It's like, I can't get into anything. I can't do anything. And it's like, okay, well, just prop up your feet. That's all I can tell you to do.
Well, here's a mop. There's some water in the break room. Go at it, buddy.
Yeah, there's somebody spilled something in the break room. We might want to take care of that.
I don't know what happened. Yeah.
Might I ask, you just went on the spring break trip with fam. How did everything go?
We couldn't all go. My nephew, my sister, my oldest sister's son got married in North Carolina, Greenville, North Carolina, not South Carolina, Greenville, North Carolina. Not all of us could go. Some of us went. And so my two older boys and my youngest boy, my six-year-old, we went down. It's a 14-hour drive from where I'm at. We made it in record time of 15 hours.
The wrong kind of record.
Right. We left early in the morning on Thursday, got there late at night on Thursday, had a day just to mess around on Friday, went to the wedding on Saturday, and then early Sunday, because I had to get one of them back to their mother's by 6, So we left about 2 a.m. on Sunday, got there no problem, back here in good old Michigan. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad we went. I'm sorry my wife and my daughter and my other son did not. It was a lot of fun. Bonding experience with my older boys. Oldest helped drive, so it wasn't just me for 15 hours.
Starting to lose kind of weight part way through it.
That did happen on the way back, but I mean, I'm a terrible passenger, so in general, I love to drive. I don't sleep as a passenger, so I'm wide awake either way, so I might as well be driving. Yeah, I mean, out of the probably 30 hours of driving there and back, I drove 20 of it, and then my son drove the other 10. Nice. So that was a big help. I mean, it was good.
Yeah, offset you quite a bit.
Very adventurous. We stayed at a Econo Lodge in Greenville, which I would not recommend because it was kind of dumpy. But no offense, Econo Lodge.
They put the con and econ.
Right. And I mean, I wasn't expecting a 5-star hotel. I did not pay for 5 stars. You know, we needed 2 beds to sleep in, and that's what it provided. But it was all right. We got to see the rest of my family, my 2 sisters and my brother and their families, and got to see my nephew get married. It was a lot of fun. He's in the Navy, so they got to wear, like, his best man and a couple of the groomsmen were also from the Navy, and so they wore their Navy uniforms, and that was pretty cool. Geez. It's all fancy and stuff. Comic book related. You know, I'm going to be at a foreign town. I've never been to North Carolina before. Never traveled that far east. I've been south. I've been west, but I've never traveled that far east. So this is my first time there. And of course, I had to check out any comic book stores that were
in the area. Yeah, you got days to burn.
My son's entertained that idea for a little bit. So I went to 2 comic stores. I think there was 3. I didn't end up getting to the third one. The first one was okay. I had a lot of toys and then a back room of comics. You know, the toys won out for that store. And I know you collect a ton of more toys than I do. I sent you a picture of the He-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Very organized. A lot of vintage stuff. A lot of vintage Transformers. You know, a good store. Other than that, the other store, the second store, was called Nostalgia Newsstand. Hmm. And they were celebrating their 46th year.
Dang.
That weekend that I went. I unfortunately couldn't make it on Saturday when they were actually having the celebration, but I made it the day before on the Friday. They actually had 2 locations. The first one was closed because they had just moved to the new one, but I visited both because I didn't know that. North Carolina's oldest comic book store, that says...
Yeah, how do you dispute it?
Yeah. Nostalgia Newsstand. I felt that store would have been like my store had I lived in the area. That was the guy that worked there. I think his name was Dave. Was very friendly. Noticed my shirt, my merch shirt, right away when I went in there, because you know I'm in a foreign land. I'm going to wear my merch shirt
for the podcast. I may not speak your language, but the imagery right here does.
And he's noticed it and said, "Is that your podcast?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Okay, I will listen to your podcast if you answer these questions."
Oh, geez.
And
that's my riddles 3.
Okay. And now I don't remember one of the questions, but he asked me 3. And one of them was there too many variant covers nowadays? And I didn't know how to answer that because he's a store. Maybe he makes all his money on variants.
Yeah.
And it's a trick question. But I said, yes, there's too many variants. And he was very happy with that answer. His other one was pretty funny because we've talked about this on the podcast. He said, should they de-age Jonathan Kent? And I went, yes, they should. They ruined my Legion of Superheroes. Absolutely. And he was very happy about that. Said he would give us a try. Very nice. He gave me a tour of this comic store. My 6-year-old was very friendly to him and gave him a free comic book. And
oh, brilliant.
Back room where it was just dollar bins, a ton of them, and I didn't even touch the surface on that. But I bought $20 of comics from that back room. Some for my wife; she likes X Files, so I got her some David Duchovny real photo covers and stuff like that.
He's dreamy.
He's so dreamy. But great store. I highly recommend if you're in the North Carolina Greenville area to check out Nostalgia Newsstand. I'll have a link, at least their Facebook link, in the show notes, so you can check them out and give them some love. And then as I was leaving, the owner came in, a really nice guy too, and introduced himself, and I was talking to him, and he said, you know, we'll ship stuff to you if you want stuff.
This is how they've been in business for 46 years.
Right. It's like, that's smooth, you know. And he doesn't, I said it was from Michigan, but he doesn't know that I have six stores in the, you know, within 20 feet of me.
Yeah. But,
very nice offer. We've got friends now in North Carolina.
Yeah. So when the zombie apocalypse comes, we know where we're going.
Right.
It's only a 14-hour drive. But we know we can, we're in good hands in North Carolina. I mentioned this to a friend of mine. We went to a toy store, a toy sale, one of those toy shows in Fort Wayne, Indiana, a couple weekends ago. And among the things that we talked about on the drive out there was the proverbial, you know, when I was younger, I remember looking at houses as we traveled to visit family and so forth in different states and such. And as we were traveling, I would look at these houses in the middle of the sticks. And I asked, where did these guys get comics? Having grown up that, you know, there was a 7-Eleven down the street, and then we'd go to a comic shops to get the actual comics we were really looking for. But it was like this whole concept of like, I don't understand where these guys would be able to just go down and grab a comic book. And it was such a foreign thing to think about. Like, they probably have zero interest in comics.
You know, as we drive through all these towns and stuff, where do they get their comics?
Top priority.
How things is that possible? Need to
be answered. The world revolves around comics. And I know that you and I had already kind of joked about it earlier, but there's still a lot of truth in the concept of comics as a sense of currency. It's like, oh, dang, that thing, you know, it's like, that was $12. That was like four comics, you know, or whatever, right. you know, back in the day. Now it's like, that's $12. That's almost a comic.
That's one comic. Currency and location. Like, where'd you go? I went, you know, the comic store, and then take a left, and then,
the world revolves around, you know, different landmarks. Want to dive into a conundrum. It was kind of a sidebar conversation that I think producer Tony had brought up initially, but it got me thinking a little bit deeper about this whole thing is that, what's your opinion on intentional sabotage, or just he's just an old actor? And that is the Harrison Ford factor. Like, you look at his legacy characters, and he's intentionally sabotaging these characters by making them into dopes in their final appearance. Is it just the way people are written these days? That's how it's coming across? Or the fact that he's cousins with Dirt, you know, that age, you know, that is just like, what is it that... You know, his last hurrah is Han Solo. We all knew that he didn't like the character. He wanted to kill the character in Return of the Jedi, and I think he even wanted to kill it in Empire. But finally, when it's outside of the control of Lucas and Lucasfilm, or when Lucas was in control of Lucasfilm, you know, he had like, what, three scenes and then dead. And then this last outing as Indiana Jones, and it like almost makes it so that no one likes the character at all anymore. And to the point where I feel like it almost tarnishes the legacy of the character, to the point where it's like no one's going to want to play this character anymore because zero interest is there. And I'm almost wondering if that's part of it. Because I remember there was some talk about what's his nuts taking over Chris Pratt as Indiana Jones. There was loose rumblings that somebody else would be
Indiana Jones. Shia LaBeouf.
And that there was like this, like no one plays Indiana Jones other than Harrison Ford. You know, it was like, I am Indiana Jones. And it's like, but after that last showing, it's like, I think you've killed the character to such a degree that no one's going to want to play this character ever again. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are. Do you think there's intention that this was part of a greater plan of like, I'm going to drive these characters into the ground to such a degree that, you know, it will be me and me only that will ever have the chance at this?
Well, I will answer your question as soon as my kids go downstairs. You're assuming, one, that Harrison Ford has any say ending of his characters, and he might, but I think it's more of how characters are written today. They don't appreciate the legacy of the character that their paycheck is from. Current writers, they want to put their mark on a character, even in comics, and so they'll treat the current version as trash or a sidebar, put forth their own version. I do think Harrison Ford probably, I never got the feeling like he really cared about any of this. Like, it's just a paycheck to him. You know, if they tell him this character is going to die, okay, that's great. I'm just, you know, there'll always be another role. I mean, I think he does realize what the character has meaning for, you know, millions of people, but I think he puts it in proper perspective that he is simply an actor making a lot of money. What everybody else likes, he, you know, it's, that's their business, not his, you know. But I never, you know, like you said, he never really was fond of Han Solo. Now, I think he is. I don't think he necessarily wants his characters to die. I just don't think he cares. Ultimately, he's smart. Like, he just, you know, I'm just going through the motions. You know, no one's going to say he's a critically acclaimed stage performer, standing ovations because of how much he put into a character. You know, he's not. He's a 80s action hero, had less action than Bruce Willis, you know. It's
just... Yeah, because I was thinking, like, you know, Working Girl and Witness and
Fugitive.
The other, you know, character. Like, I'll know the conspiracy that I'm thinking of is true if he comes back as Jack Ryan just to kill a character off or to other his franchise. Because even... You know, I did like Blade Runner.
Oh, he killed that too, didn't he?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where I just keep thinking about, like, any of his ongoing, like, repeated characters, his franchise characters, they all kind of, like, he's going through one by one systematically, shutting them down. And it's just like, makes me wonder, I'm going to just lay so much stink over this character that it's going to kill it and no one will want to touch it again. And thus ensuring I got my paycheck and going to ruin it for anybody else who's going to try to come in and replace me. You know, you think about as a Bond fan, you know, it's like, how do you replace Sean Connery when he quit this franchise? And then they were like, well, we'll get George Lazenby. And then that turned out to be kind of a bust.
Well, look, there's Roger Moore.
Yeah, let's go to Roger Moore. Yeah. And I was like, you know, they had, even at that time before they got George Lazenby, they were talking to Timothy Dalton, who is still, from an acting and appearance, is probably the best Bond that they ever had and ever will have. He just had some craptacular scripts.
I mean, everybody who's listened to the podcast knows how I feel about The Force Awakens and the trilogy after that, and how they treated Han Solo Luke Skywalker. Of course, they treated Princess Leia okay, but
Mary Poppins
still wasn't that great. They treat Han Solo with reverence and then kill him off at the end, kind of as a, look, anything can happen to these characters that you love. In some ways, that works in other stories and other.
Yeah, but it's not Game of Thrones, you know.
Right.
Oh my gosh, anything's up for grabs.
Exactly. You don't do that to Han Solo, Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't. That's not the universe that was created. There's no. You know, it's a pulpy hero story. It's not supposed to be dark, never-ending. They remain heroes. That's why it's loved by so many. It's just they mistreated every character. And I'm sure, you know, that's what they did with Indiana Jones, too. Now, I've only watched the first half hour of that new Indiana Jones, and I don't know when I'll get back to it. But
or if.
I didn't hate it. I just wasn't super entertained by it. Dull and predictable and
yeah, kind of a why. Yeah, I was just kind of curious. I, you know, didn't mean to go into a full deep dive, but it was more of just like, you know, there is a coincidental level of you really stunk up the place on these last attempts. Point where you go like, is this intentional? Kind of like a cleaning house. Marvel had a character called Fool Killer. Do you remember that character at all? It was just basically a means of just getting rid of all the dumb characters in the Marvel universe. Even the name implies that, you know, and it was somewhat for shock value. It's like, we got to stop this Fool Killer because he's killing off all these heroes. And it's like, but is he really killing off all these heroes? Because these are like the nobodies in the Marvel universe. It was just kind of getting rid of all the excess waste of characters that they had in there. You know, repertoire.
And something else you said, you know, James Bond, they replaced the actor. I used to be in the camp where, oh, they can't replace the actor. But nowadays, if they replaced Luke or, you know, told a story with a different actor or with a young Han Solo, like the Solo movie, the actor they picked was great. The script was the problem. The actor was good. I didn't mind that one bit. You know, the new Lando, fine. It worked. They picked close enough. The actors were good. So I'm at the point where they can replace any of these people, you know, like Luke Skywalker. What's the Bucky character?
Oh, Sebastian Shaw.
Yeah, he looks just like a young Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
He's not quite as young anymore, but, you know, put him in there. He said he's willing to do it with these guys. They're just actors. You know, they're playing a different character. They're playing the same character. I don't care. Like, I'm in probably the minority of camp where I think they should replace Chadwick with Black Panther, you know, with another actor playing Black Panther. Like, I don't, he did great, and you probably can't top him, but you need Black Panther in the Marvel universe, and the only way you're gonna do that is to get a new actor and let him do his own take on it. No disrespect, and I think he would want the character to move on and not just have the character die off in the movies and stuff like that either. You know, it's just, it's tragic what happened, but you can honor him and still replace him.
And just for clarification, I think I said Sebastian Shaw, which is an X-Men villain. It's Sebastian Stan. Oh,
yeah. Stan, yeah.
Yeah.
Sebastian Shaw would be awesome.
Yeah. It was the Black King and the...
Yeah.
A little bit off. A little bit off.
Just a little.
But yeah. I mean, he would have been spot on. You know, there's a few other people that could have done it. But yeah, I mean, I know the deep fake that they wound up using for The Mandalorian was okay. I would not like to have seen that go on for a while. But I think, you know, for those brief moments, it was very serviceable. But going forward, I
wouldn't. Unlike the
different actor,
unlike the Princess Leia,
Peter Cushing,
Cushing was at least better, but you know, the technology wasn't there yet. You could have showed Princess Leia's from the back, you know, for back of her head,
yeah, because those buns
like that,
the cinnamon buns, you know, hairdo,
and then you don't show their face.
Having watched both seasons of the new Reacher on Amazon. Versus Tom Cruise. You're thinking like Tom Cruise, movie star, one of the last big, just having that person in a movie will draw people in. You really can't get much bigger currently. Yet his Reacher movies were not, he didn't represent what the character was. And then the new dude that's in Amazon Reacher series is like, that's spot on to the book. Right. Giant of a dude, just cast correctly, you know.
Alan Ritchson. He's perfect. I like him. I wasn't sure at first for the first episode.
And I know like they've had to recast some other characters here or there, because we were even talking at work about the TV show Lost. Things happened you know, actors got booted, you know, got fired from the show. And the whole show is built around each of these characters having an integral part. And then all of a sudden they get fired. And it's like, now what do you do? And it's like, well, you could replace the characters. Again, one of my favorite cartoons is that The Adventures of Gumball. They actively acknowledge that the voice actors get swapped out during the series. And it's like, they kind of go, and then the new voice actor kicks in. You know, I mean, it's just like, oh, are you going through puberty? Oh, I guess not. You know, it's like a whole other voice comes out. It's such a great concept. And they acknowledge it. They play it up. And it's like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, to kind of, if you're going to do a cartoon, they still wanted to keep the kid character actors in there. And, you know, what do you do when that character actor starts to age out of it? So,
well, I mean, the actor who still does Bart Simpson, the actress.
Yeah.
Voice actor, you know. She hasn't aged out of it yet, has she?
What, Nancy Cartwright or something like that? I keep thinking that's the right name for her.
It's Sebastian Stan Shaw. I mean,
Sebastian Shaw. Interchangeable. Same person. Fictional, real life. They're one and the same. Sounds like
we're going to talk about a book today.
I think it's actually a collection of books, of comic books.
Comic books? Who reads comic books anymore? They're
funny books?
That's impossible. I think we're on a Mark Waid run of comics right now since the last episode was Irredeemable.
Correct. Even though
we recorded that a few episodes ago. And this time we've hit the Marvel circuit of Mark Waid, which I'm not as familiar with. I know his work on DC. I probably could talk about that until I die. His Marvel stuff, I'm not so familiar with. Not his fault. It's my fault. But yeah, we're reading Daredevil by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. And this came out in 2000 and blah, blah, blah. I'm looking at it right now. 2016 is the book, the trade for it. I'm sure it came out a bit before then, but this is probably my first Samnee work as well. Certainly not my first Mark Waid, but first one for Marvel. Reviewing Daredevil 1-5, did we say, or 6? I don't know.
1-5 was what was in the trade that I had, and then they had issue 0.1.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have to tell me about that, because I don't think that was in mine, my hardcover trade. My trade goes to, oh, wait, it did have 0.1. My trade collects 1-10 and then 1.5 and 0.0. Boy, Marvel, if you need to number it like that, can you rethink that and just go 1-10, please?
Yeah. I mean, it's nice because it gives you a sense as to like where this issue falls in continuity. But if you're that beholden to continuity, you know, back in the day, they would have that little editor's note. This,
right,
you know, took place between issues 18 and 24 or whatever, you know.
Right. Page 12 and page 14 of issue. That.
You know, that classic, you know, comics, you know, shortcuts.
So I don't think I read point, even though it's in this trade, I think it was the last story. And I didn't get to the last story because I stopped at issue like 8 or something.
So okay.
I even read further
than the assignment.
And I'll tell you why later. But
yeah, because I was going to say the same, that there was a reason why I should have continued to read. And that's, I'm going to jump right to the reason why on my end, and that was this 5 issues in this collection ended partway through the story, and it's like,
no,
you know, I mean, it just was like, oh, well, I guess that's it for these 5. It's like, it wasn't a complete story arc, and I know that there's always going to be something that kind of like continues, you know, that these stories, you know, like, oh, gotta leave it for, you know, potential sequels. And it's like, that's perfectly fine, but like, okay, there's more to be told, which is great because it is an ongoing series. You can't wrap everything up. But I mean, it clearly left off after these five issues of like, okay, now what happens next? Immediately next, not like, oh, where is this story going to lead? It's like, no, immediately what happens next? On a certain number of Rothley's chart, I would say, I would give it a solid like B+. If I were to put an actual like school grade on it, the reason for it not to get an A or a reason not to go lower, you know, for a new reader, you know, because of the way that they treated this series, it was clearly a jumping on point. They still had a lot of baggage from older Daredevil that if you didn't know who or what they were referencing, you'd feel like I'm clearly missing something. And they're like, yeah, we killed off Foggy. Spoilers, you know, and we did this. And now he's moved and his identity is public. And, you know, so I'm kind of giving away quite a bit of the story arc. But
there will be spoilers.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, oh, so this isn't really a jump on point because there's a lot of things that had happened and they're referencing it. So, and not referenced in such a super clear way that it's making like where I go, oh, okay. Yep. You know, you explained it well. Got it. It's just like, yeah, you should already know this. And it's like, oh, right. Okay. So that's for the long-term reader to have understood. And then the other aspect of it is they upped and moved him from, you know, he was a Daredevil of Hell's Kitchen. And I thought that kind of was really, really fitting. And he also was like in New York for a reason with all the other heroes. And issue one basically has him, I'm in San Francisco. And you're like, what? Why? What happened? What just went down? His villains are also in San Francisco. And it's
right. It wasn't new villains. It was still his old villains.
Classic villains. Yeah. Yeah.
The Owl and Purple Man shows up later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Shroud is interesting, and I'll talk to him. Talk about him.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, he's not technically, he wasn't always a villain, whatever, you know, but it was just like, okay. So obviously you got to pick up and, you know, he's got his own rogues gallery, but I would have thought like New City, let's pick it up. Like when Grant Morrison took on the Batman and Robin comic, you know, that's where that, what was it, like Professor Pig, and he started introducing new villains. And it's like, oh, okay, new writer, new villains, new kind of like we're adding to, you know, so that we're not, it's not always Batman versus Joker. Guess what the next issue is going to be? Batman versus Joker. And the issue after that, probably going to be Batman versus Joker. And then one after that is Batman versus Harley Quinn. If you're going to have him fight the same villains, then just put him back in freaking New York. He's in San Francisco, so he's got new villains to fight. And I thought that would have been great, you know.
Yeah.
But there was something about the, I guess, equity and having some of these old villains, you know. Hey, he's got a rogues gallery. Let's keep those going.
I mean, it's Marvel, so you have villains that live on that coast. You know, you could use the whole entirety of Marvel Comics and just fill it with different encounters, you know.
But what I did like, and like, you know, to kind of counter my negative commentary about like, oh, why is it the same villains and all this stuff? The positive though was I did like the fact that it's like, hey, he's in a new city, and as a blind man, he was accustomed to all the stuff that was in New York, and he's trying to get used to a new surroundings. He doesn't have the familiarity, he doesn't have the understanding, and I thought that was pretty cool. You know, he kind of like recognized it's not as easy for somebody to relocate, especially somebody like this, where it's like, I used to know every, you know, blade of grass in New York City, but here it's all, everything new, all the sounds, all the locations, like streets. I don't know where I'm at. I don't know what's nearby. And I thought that was an interesting challenge that was introduced. For that and some of the other, you know, some of the other characters that were created for this, you know, introduction into the San Francisco area, I liked, you know, some of those. It had a very much like you know, here's a Commissioner Gordon analog, you know, and, right, yeah. you know, here's the, you know,
the girlfriend. And
yeah, the, you know, so there was just some aspects that were like, yep, you know, this will work. He already got himself established. And, you know, some of the hazards of having a public identity, which then goes back to, then why wear a costume? If you got a public right. identity, why have a mask?
It's yeah. armor too, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I guess, you know, if it was that, like, I think was it in the Netflix Daredevil that they, you know, he had, like, plating and so forth in the helmet and some of these other things, you know, had it yep. built to give him a little bit more protection than just a costume.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fresh start. I mean, it was a jumping on point with some mystery as you went along. I think I enjoyed the San Francisco aspect a little better, but I wasn't expecting it like, oh, I kind of like him in New York. You know, I wanted to read that Daredevil because I'm not a big Daredevil fan. Sorry, Matt 10.0, but I do like the character. I just have never owned a Daredevil comic short of like 3 years ago. I bought a bunch and still haven't read them. But, you know, I enjoyed what Mark Waid did for those issues. The thing about Mark Waid, and I've said this before, is, you know, he'll flip a story a little bit, but he knows what old time readers want. He will give us what we're used to, but in a new kind of way. Like this, I mean, this didn't break any new ground. He didn't, you know, he didn't kill off all the other supporting characters. I know Foggy, you know, that was a subplot too, but I mean, like, you know, it's not like New York was nuked and he had to move and, you know, it's a darker Daredevil and, you know, it's trying to change. He didn't try to change the character, the basic motive or style. You know, he didn't armor him up or, you know, Tony Stark tech, you know. He made Daredevil and he just moved him to a new city. Of course, gave him new things to encounter because that's what stories are about. You know, he's still, like, if Foggy wasn't in there at all, I would have gone, well, where's his best friend? Mm-hmm. And it was kind of neat. And yeah, it was a huge mystery of what happened to him. You know, why are they saying Foggy's dead? But we know he's not dead. And you'd learn that in the last issue 5 or whatever. But and that was a great story too. That was probably my favorite, by the way. but I enjoyed what he did. Mark Waid has a style about him that I appreciate, to know the character that he writes for. Like, he's very conscious on character and it shows. It was great. You know, new girlfriend, and she's kind of a lawyer as well, and they've opened up this office, and it was a cute little thing where Matt thinks it's Murdoch and whatever, but it's the other way around on the door. You know, it's a cute little thing, right? And you know, maybe he later on he'll read it with his fingers or whatever, but you know, it was a cute little joke, but it shows, you know, how playful they are. I mean, I agree with you with, you know, the villains. It would have been a nice take had it been someone different. And maybe it is later, but these first 5 issues, it was both familiar and not familiar. The art style, Chris Samnee, I didn't think I would like it, but I really liked it a lot. It's simple. I think it has a lot to do with the colors, which he doesn't do, you know, it's colorist, but I enjoyed the art more than I thought I would. Like, you know, I'm a George Perez, detail matters kind of guy. And this is, you know, shadow and darkness and simple, but I like the way he storytell it. You know, it's just panel by panel. It worked for me. The action was fun. I mean, that's one of the reasons I read more. It's like, okay, I'm having fun with this. Let's find out what else Mark Waid has Daredevil do and see where he wants to go. It got a little darker after that, that's for sure. But with some interesting takes. He's not afraid to try and go back to the origin and tell something a little different with it.
Disappointed by the end of issue 5 that, you know, the owl wasn't resolved, nor the, you know, Shroud character wasn't resolved. And, you know, you had issues 2, 3, 4, and 5 with a story arc. And it's like, nope, didn't resolve it even after 4. And I keep going back to not to ding it or dig at it again, but it's like early days of Marvel, you know, this has all been done in 2 issues at most, maybe a single issue. Would have had a move in issue 1, issue 2, he fought the owl, issue 3, he fought the Shroud, or vice versa, or even at most, it would have been Father Shroud, then the owl, then back to Shroud. You know, and that would have been it. That would have been 4 issues and have been wrapped up. But here it's like, it took 5 issues and it's still not done.
But yeah. The Shroud's pretty cool. I've forgotten about that character. He was in some Avengers 30s or something like that. Not 130, 230s. With the Shroud that I always liked, even when we were making Champions characters, I made the Shroud because I liked him so much. And he was a hero back then, and he did some West Coast Avengers issues as well. He was in, and always as a good guy. I'm trying to remember if he was a West Coast Avengers at one point, Avenger, but I think he was. And he was always interesting to me. Of course, there was a little twist here that, you know, they made, Mark Waid made him a villain, in essence. I mean, a misunderstood hero, maybe.
Yeah,
you could argue.
In his mind, he's still a hero.
Just a very interesting take on the character. I felt initially when I had read the first one and it was the Shroud, I thought, oh no, did Mark Waid make him a bad guy? Don't do this, Mark. You know, he was one of my favorite darkness controlling heroes, you know. And of course, that's really important to me. But, you know, but after that, I trusted what he did and it was entertaining. And in the back of my head, you know, I kept thinking, well, I think the Shroud could just kill Daredevil, right? In the story, Daredevil even says that, you know, with this darkness, whatever, the dark force. Not what I was expecting, which is kind of what I like. And it took an obscure character and made him relevant again.
Yeah. And it was kind of a fitting connection to Daredevil, you know, a guy who lives visually in complete darkness. And then having a guy who controls darkness confront each other. So, yeah, it was a good connection, good pairing. I wasn't familiar with the Shroud character like you obviously were. So, to me, it was like I kind of remember seeing him, but I don't remember the character much in the Marvel issues that I collected. So, it was good to kind of like, huh, okay, that's good. Use of some other, and that's what I was kind of hoping. It's like you move the character into a different location, unearth some of these characters that never gets any sort of appreciation, you know, make that a thing.
The owl was interesting as a villain. I'm probably less familiar with him than you. Yeah, they did cliffhanger it, like you said, and both main stories was pretty unresolved. I mean, they kind of got resolved with the owl, but it left it wide open for some more stuff. So maybe down the line he did it some more with it.
Yeah, it was kind of a three-way between the Shroud, Daredevil, and the owl around the nuclear power plant.
I mean, they set up the owl to be this even bigger villain, you know, towards the end there when he gets downloaded with some stuff.
Yeah, which again, kind of with the owl's character, the wisdom, the wise owl, the kind of the stereotypes you associate with an owl, kind of added more to that kind of concept. But again, it just ended with him. Was he captured? Was he, you know, kind of was captured, but not really? Is he, like, did he get thrown into jail? And it's like, huh, Okay.
I don't know.
And then issue 5, kind of like, you know, after they wrapped up the adventures between, you know, Shroud and Daredevil duking it out with the owl in between. Issue 5 is they bring back Foggy as a, like, you know, whatever happened to Foggy? Why did he die? And they bring it back to New York for this one shot. And it's kind of good to have a break. It's like, okay, you know, here's your one shot. Get back to being
a nice little simple flashback. Kind of neat. You know, you're in the Marvel Universe and you throw in a guest star with Ant-Man and you know, that works for me. I like guest stars. And like I said, that number 5 is probably my favorite just because not only explained why Foggy had to be killed and hidden and brought back, it just was a more simplified story that I was missing in the first 4 issues. It didn't have anything to do with Shroud or the Owl. Like, it was just a nice reset for Matt and Foggy to be friends. And why is he also now suddenly in San Francisco? You know, like you said, the number 4 kind of resolved. So it was kind of like a palate cleanser, but still moved the story forward. Which I appreciated.
No, they never did explain the character Leapfrog getting this high-tech armor. You know, because I remember him as a classic villain, but he kind of had this dopey rubber costume that was like somewhat Kermit-like. And this is some giant mech that he's inside and battling it out. So I don't know if they explain that in another one or if it's just like, nope. One and done, and doesn't matter because it gets destroyed at the end.
I would think Mark Waid was just setting that up for a different story later on. I would bet you.
Yeah.
You know, I know he didn't read issue 6, or maybe he did, but...
No, this series ended right at 5. That was that trade, and that was it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, issue 6 dealt with Matt's mother, which I had no clue that she was still alive. So that was kind of interesting, too, a little family reunion there. It would have been out of place had it been earlier, but after the Foggy issue, I think it was a nice touch for Matt to reconnect with his mother, and you learned a little more about him, or at least I did. Well, I think this is a Frank Miller thing where she was a nun, but I'm not positive about that. I might edit that out. But
yeah,
I don't know. It was interesting.
This did make me want to read more. I mean, I was buying Daredevil comics since basically like Miller's run, and to Klaus Janson, to David Mazzucchelli, or however you pronounce his last name, through even
Miller's run.
Yeah. Romita Jr.'s run. I quit at, after Lee Weeks. So, I mean, I was getting Daredevil for quite a long run. I enjoyed the character because it was kind of more grounded. He was street level, but still had superpowers. I mean, it was always kind of frustrating as to like how you would interpret it. Did he really have powers, or did he just rely on his sense of hearing more? You know,
yeah.
Sometimes it was radar sense, and they'd have all those concentric circles going around his head. But then, you know, Frank Miller kind of came in and it's like, no, it just heightened your other senses of hearing and so forth, and you just need to refine it more. And I was like, okay. You know, kind of took some of the superhuman level out of it. I guess that kind of also brought him back to being like, well, he can't see. If he had radar sense, he might as well be able to see. There were some aspects in this Mark Waid's thing, which I was like, you know, sometimes it was this, sometimes it was others. He's like, you know, I got to tune everything else out to listen to this ticking. And it's like, okay, so it's listening that he's using. But then the other times it's like, clearly he was like going radar sense, like bloop, 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 you know, a little Doppler effect going around. And it's like, wait a minute, why is he having to, you know, try to listen for this heartbeat amongst other things when he can clearly make out shapes and everything else using his radar sense?
Yeah.
But I guess it goes back to, it's a freaking comic book. And whatever the story needs, let the story, you know, supersede, you know, continuity or whatever consistency in its approach.
Frank Miller did issues 165, 166, 168 to 191. And then he came back for an issue there. And then he did Born Again, which was 226 to 233. Now, I own some of the run between 168 and 191. I don't own all of them.
Yeah, I'm missing a few as well.
And like I said, I haven't read them. I bought them because I knew I would read them eventually. I'm sure they were dollar bin finds. You know, I don't like to spend more than a dollar on my comics if I don't have to. And they were there. So I do look forward to reading that stuff. I know it's, you know, it's like Walt Simonson's Thor, John Byrne's X-Men. You know, it's the essential character development with the essential writer and art that everyone, you know, raves about. So I do want to read that stuff. I do like the character. For some reason, maybe part of it is I'm a DC guy, and then I just never made it over to those popular Marvel sections at the time. I was too Legion, Titans, Justice League oriented.
Loyal to a fault.
I guess. And, you know, Superman, I end up mostly liking team books instead of solo books. And I think this just fell in the cracks for me. It's like, you know, Daredevil's one hero. You know, I can read the Legion where there's 30, or Justice League where there's 12, and Titans there's 8. You know, why would I pick just one hero? And that's not saying I didn't collect Captain America or something, but, you know, I just, more heroes and their interaction. I think that's what I liked growing up. That's not necessarily what I read now, but yeah, Daredevil just fell through the cracks for me. And, you know, if I was given a choice between reading a Spider-Man and a Daredevil, I think I'd pick Daredevil because I enjoy Spider-Man even less.
And there goes our last listener.
Right. I'm sorry, Matt 10.0. I picked your two favorite characters and cut on them again. But, you know, I just, and it is, I certainly have a large number of Spider-Man comics. I just never tried to collect them. I just ended up with them, you know. Kids love Spider-Man. And that's all that matters, right?
Yeah. Marvel had its flagship character, and DC had its flagship character. When that came out, the Superman versus Spider-Man in the Treasury edition, when you were young, did you dive into that as like, oh my gosh, this is amazing?
You know, my brother got the original Spider-Man, Superman, and I read that when he wasn't around. I remember buying the Hulk and Batman one and a couple other of the crossovers. That was Captain Marvel and Superman. But there was a couple, and I did get the second Spider-Man, Superman one and dove into that. I enjoyed those probably too much. I'm sure I read them a few times. And so, I'm not against these characters. I think for me, it was just prioritizing because I had a limited budget.
Yeah.
And, I'll say that. Yep. And, you know, I had to pick and choose. So I'm going to mostly pick DC, and then, you know, I'll pick a Captain America up, and that's just the ones I was really enjoying. Would end up winning over, you know, acclaimed series at the time. You know, there are so many from Marvel that I've since started reading and owning, but it's just back then it was the 80s, man.
Yeah, it is funny because there was just key books that I just had no interest. None. I remember when that whole, like, the Punisher first miniseries came out, you know, the Mike Zeck stuff. Mm-hmm. And everybody was swooning over it. I'm like, going, I couldn't care at all. I'm not a Punisher fan. And, you know, but people are like, oh my gosh, he's got his own miniseries. Can't believe it. The 4-issue miniseries that quickly became 5 issues.
Yeah.
You know, and then some of the other ones, it just didn't ring any bells with me to go like, oh, I got to grab that. This has got to be mine. Yeah, and I know, like you said, you know, the Titans was your thing. I wasn't necessarily a group title because I thought it was like, well, I'm trying to think, what was I getting leading up to that? Yeah, I mean, I did wind up getting some group titles down the road. I mean, I was getting the X-Men during the lead, you know, the pre-Image departure. You know, all the X titles, because it was like X Factor had Will Sportasio at that time. Jim Lee was on X Men, and Rob Liefeld was on 4.
New Mutants. Yeah. Yeah. And that was a good time to be a comic collector. I really do think that was a great time because there were so many potentials and there was so much new art and new story. A lot to like. It was a magical comic book time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was getting those off titles as well during that time as well.
Martial Law.
Oh, man. Haywire. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Remember Haywire.
The Proverbial Propeller Man and some of these other, like, oh, man. The Grant Morrison Doom Patrols, the Shade of the Changing Man's.
Death, the High Cost of Living. Yeah.
Man, talk about your emo of the right. era.
And, yeah, what else were you? I'm trying to think what else you were ordering. The reason Martial Law just jumps out
of every time. Yeah, that was what? Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill. What was it? Nemesis, I think, was the character that they created for over there in England that was like more or less a banned comic book.
Did you get any of the universe stuff?
No. I was kind of thinking about it, you know, because I keep coming across, like, you can get, like, Night Mask kind of looked good, and Romita Jr. was doing some stuff here or there on Star Brand, but...
My wife the other week, called me up and said, do you... there's some new universe stuff. Do you want me to pick that up? And she said, or I said, yeah, sure, why not? You know, I've gotten a few of them, but nothing major. And she said, well, how many do you want? And I said, what do you mean? And she took a picture and it was a huge pile.
Oh my gosh.
And it turns out it was the same copy. of Night Mask number one. And yeah, probably something like that. You know? It was like 20 issues of number one and 20 issues of, you know, another issue, number Cy one.
Force.
Oh, okay. Yes, yeah, Cyforce. So I've got a couple if you want. you need to line a cage with or something.
Yeah. And I know we've done this in past podcasts, but there is something about a limited universe that really appeals to me. You know, it's like when there's so many heroes. And when you think about like with Marvel Comics, and there's like for every normal human, there's 5 mutants. Is there really that much hatred out there anymore? Because there's like a million, if not, you know, like there's out of the 7-8 billion people on the planet, 5 billion are mutants. You know, and it's like
they all live in New York.
Yeah. It's just like every issue they're introducing, here's a new one. Here's a whole island. Here's a whole country of nothing but mutants. And you're like, I'm so tired of this. And, you know, oh, we're being ostracized. And it's like, who cares? You know, it's like.
By who?
Yeah. Yeah. But at this point, you outnumber the humans. So you're not the, you know, minority being, you know, put down. It's you outnumber them. So why bother being concerned? So in any event, you know, there's something to be said about these limited where like there's 5 heroes and it's like, oh, okay. You know, it's like when you see the hero, it's an event. You know, I mean, the proverbial look up in the sky, because it drew your attention, like, holy crap. But if you go over to Marvel, you know, you look up in the sky, you can't see the sun because it's all eclipsed by all the heroes flying around. And it's like, well, yeah, I'm kind of, there's something to be said. And I know that when, I think it was CrossGen or Valiant or something, one of those guys came out saying, like, you can actually collect every comic we produce because we're only going to make like 8 a month or something like this. We're focusing on, yeah, it's a shared universe, but there are only going to be so many or something like that. And I just like that. And that's what New Universe kind of like, get in on the ground floor, pick these books up. But then when you looked at the books, it's like, ooh, Kickers Inc. Why would you give superpowers to sports? Whatever, athletes. You know, and then there was
NFL Pro.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was another. But I mean, Ron Frenz did, I think, Kickers Inc. So, I mean, good art. I don't know if Tom DeFalco is usually those two are paired together, did the writing. But, and that's what constantly has the allure of like, do I go back and get Night Mask and find out what that was? You know, at this point, this is a glorified limited series. You know, do I go back and get, you know, Star Brand because it is, you know, 20 issues or something like that. And it has a clear beginning. And when John Byrne came in and did his whatever and wrapped it up, it's like, well, there's an ending to it. I know that Warren Ellis, I guess, came back as like New Universal or something like that and pulled some of those characters back. And they've reintroduced both Star Brand and Night Mask into Marvel's current continuity. It's like, okay, I mean, obviously it didn't have
nothing sacred anymore.
I know, but it's just something about, I liked the fact that, you know, you could own it, you could talk to your friends like, hey man, you see what happened in the last issue of Star Brand? You know, I was like, oh yeah, we could all talk about what happened in the last issue of Star Brand. But if you said, did you see that last issue of Batman? And it's like, which one? Batman Robin, Batman Dark Knight, Batman Detective, Batman, you know, like out of the 16 Batman titles that month, which Batman? And it's like, yeah, good luck collecting them all.
Batman versus Spawn.
Yeah, Batman and the Turtles, Batman and, you know, yep. Pillsbury Doughboy. So, you know, the Dark Knight and the Dough Knight.
Boo.
Sorry. Hey, what time is it, sir? I can't all be gems at this hour. You can edit that out.
Would you recommend Daredevil to someone else?
As far as like top recommendation, no. But it's like, hey, did you read all the Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips books? Yes. Okay. Did you read all of Darwyn Cook's Parker? Yes. Well, I guess at this point you can read Daredevil. That's where I would put it in the recommendation. It's still a solid read. It is a comfortable read. One of the things that Mark Waid I like about his stuff is that the dialogue feels natural. The pacing seems straightforward. You don't feel like he's trying to rush through something and then drag things out like a Bendis does. It's like, wow, he actually lets a fight scene be a fight scene. He lets conversation be a conversation, where like Bendis is like, off camera, this gigantic battle took place in Galactus, destroyed the universe. Now back to them talking to each other in, you know, just these talking heads moments. And it's like, what is, you know, I mean, that's a documentary. This is comic books. This is, you know, people use this as escape, not to hear, you know, or read ramblings, kind of like what I'm doing now, you know. But so, you know, would this receive, like, I'm, you know, running to the rooftops and yelling out, read Daredevil by Mark Waid and Samnee? It's like, no, I would say it's going to be more of, yeah, if somebody asks, like, you know, is there a good Daredevil run? I'd say, yeah, this was a good Daredevil run.
And it was. I mean, I enjoyed reading it. It was fun. It was light for the most part. And I would recommend it to someone who was unfamiliar with Daredevil. Maybe this would be a fun start.
but anybody who was knee deep in Frank Miller Daredevil, I'm not sure they would get the same amount out of this. Seems like it's just treading the same, but in a different location. You know, it's just, you know, you gave it a B plus grade, and I think that's pretty accurate. I would even say maybe a straight B. I mean, it's good, solid storytelling, good, solid art, successful enough conclusion to some of the stories, to where I was like, I didn't waste my money. Better than some we've read on the podcast, but not better than the top, you know, five books that we've read on the podcast. Certainly not.
And I don't know if this was meant to be, you know, like some of the ones that I think we kind of keep in our top, some of those were meant to be epic tales. You know, looking at just even the covers where it says Samnee 2013, it's like, oh, this is been a while. It is now 10 years old. So clearly you're not pulling these particular issues. They've long since moved on to other titles. But now that we're getting to it, sure. I would have considered this like this would have been a good pull title that I would have read month after month and just kind of enjoyed it for what it was, but not looked at it as being like, oh, what epic story is going to be told this month.
If you liked Daredevil as much as we did or more, let us know. Let's see. Our webpage is, and this is why I love comics podcast.buzzsprout.com. You can email us at, and this is why I love comics @gmail.com. You can join us on the X or Twitter at, and this is why I L1. We're on the Facebook. Go check us out. We post things that visually we can't do on the audio podcast, so we'll put it up on Facebook. There's a calendar of events that I have to update soon, but it's lists what we're going to read, what's coming up. Join us on the TikTok. I've been remiss the last week. I was normally putting bracket stuff up there, but I went on vacation, so I'm going to start that up again tomorrow. Speaking of brackets, I think there's two people that haven't put their votes in. So, I mean, with seven people having voted, I can tell who's going to win on most of them. But there's still a couple where it's undecided. Those two
that close.
So, probably in the next week or so, I'll have round two finished and we'll move right into round three and probably do a episode based on round three, and we'll talk about round two in it. You can support the show, become a Patreon member, and you will get access to things like audio that was fun or inappropriate for the regular feed.
You have been warned.
Yes, and some extra goodies on the audio side of it that is fun to listen to. We have some other ideas on a visual side or a prize side, which will, as soon as I have some time available, I'll throw some stuff out there. There was some in the last episode, the Irredeemable episode that I had to edit out, where we went on a tangent regarding the brackets. I'm going to post that on the Patreon site as well. We got into some detail on the first round that we didn't in the actual episode, but I didn't really want to repeat bracket information when we already had an episode on it. So that'll go right to the Patreon. Patreon, I don't know why I'm having trouble saying that now. So exclusive content, early show release will eventually be on there as well. And yeah, it'll be fun. Join us there. Thanks to all our supporters and friends of the show. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks to producer Tony, co-host Matt 2.0, Kevin, Jamie, Matt 10.0, Katie, and Nick for judging. Check out Jamie's YouTube channel. It's at J-Hood Comics. The links are in the show notes. Thanks to Thunder Chicken for the tunes. Check them out on Spotify, won't you? that's it for us. I'm Andy.
And I'm Mike.
And we'll talk to you later. Bow, 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 bow.
Have you looked at this dude named Anthony Ingruber? That's the one that they said is basically Harrison Ford Jr. So if they ever wanted to bring back Han, this is the guy to do it. Kind of like how the Sebastian Stan, not Shaw, Sebastian Stan was the Mark Hamill. This is the Harrison Ford.